and welcome to Big Gay Energy. I'm Bree.
I'm Theora.
And I'm Caitlin.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters, and we're here to talk about it.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
What's on the big gay agenda today? Bree. Bree's back, everyone. All the cheers for all the queers today.
Woo! Listen, finally, we're back with...
We are.
Some Warrior Nun.
What? Warrior Nun fun.
Warrior Nun fun for episode... Season 2, episode 7.
Yes, it Psalms. Is called... Oh, do you know it? Oh, okay, go.
Psalms 116:15.
Yes, the wisest psalms. And how does this episode open? It opens with Ava, literally and figuratively, falling from grace into a stained glass window and then superhero landing on the floor of some building.
Listen, this whole opening, like we just got in, we came in on the badass.
We did.
Stayed in the badass.
We did. And who swoops in after her? Well, it's Lilith. And they proceed to have, like, a battle in this swanky mansion that conveniently has, like, knight armor and weapons.
Yeah. I mean, just off.
Right.
You know, that's what good, my mansion has in it.
You know, good location choice, guys, for your battling.
Yes.
The fighting is pretty kick-ass throughout this entire place, though. So there's that, which is great. And their banter's pretty fun, too. Yeah. A couple of things happen during this fight scene that are important for the episode. Ava notices that, like, every time she has bare skin in the light, that it starts a sizzling. So she's like, what the fuck is this? And it turns out it's Adriel's new plague. He sizzles the non-believers. Ew.
Yeah, for real. That is... He should not have any kind... I want to know what tech Jillian has that he has manipulated, or Christian or whomever has manipulated into something that can tell if someone's a believer or not.
Yeah. Are they doing, like, I don't even know, like instead of an x-ray, it's like a prayer scan where it scans you and looks for, like, prayers. If you prayed to Adriel, you get
to walk in. Or did they just give all the believers sunscreen?
Right. It's, and then also, is it like manipulating the rays of the sun? That's pretty dramatic and, you know.
Not probable.
No. So not only is it gross, but it's pure, it's, you know, classic Sladriel. He's got to go over the top always on his bullshit. Yeah. But on a less ill note, What I found interesting about this scorching, like, light was that it sounds a lot like when Lilith was describing her time in the other dimension. Mm-hmm. So I also wonder, is this an Arctech technology thing, or is this something Adriel co-opted from Rhea, where, like, in the other dimension she manipulated the light to burn non-believers, like the way Lilith was burning when she got sent over there? He likes stealing shit from other people, so I'm just throwing that out there.
He's a thief.
Yeah. He's not super original, you know? He's just an asshat.
I do like, the fight was really cool. The only part I didn't like was when Ava gets impaled.
Yeah, we'll get to that. That part was not so great. Pretty gory. But before we get to the impaling, Ava and Lilith have a pretty important conversation where she's like, yeah. Lilith, come back to your sisters. We remember you after 7 episodes. Please come back. And basically, Lilith lets it drop, like, all the things that have been bothering her while she's, like, pummeling Ava with her divinium wings. So it's like a therapy session with fists, if you will. And she basically admits that she, as in Lilith, feels like she doesn't belong in this world, period. So it's almost like she went to the other side, that changed her forever, and now she came back and, like, she's like, where do I belong? I'm so different. I'm this anomaly with these wings nobody else has. My mom doesn't love me. My sisters didn't give a fuck about me. I just have this creepy dude who's, like, giving me advice. So it's, like, very sad that, like, Lilith just, she's been grappling with this identity crisis the whole season, and it just, like, comes out when she's, like, fighting Ava. But she makes some valid points about her journey here, so I appreciated this. And their fight scene, I do like watching these two fight together because they could both phase in and out.
Yeah, so,
like,
that was so cool.
It's very cool. I like the way how they did their fight scenes together. So it's very fun to watch these two. Like, I hate that they're at war with each other, but their magical powers are really fun, like, to watch in a fight scene, you know?
You have to have them fight. It might as well make it really awesome.
I totally agree. But unfortunately, that fighting leads to the impaling you were talking about. Because there's a, of course, there's a knight armor, like armor suit.
Suit of armor. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Ava goes bloop.
Right onto it. That looked like it stings a little.
Just a little. There's, like, blood dribbling out of her mouth. I think it hurt a lot.
Yeah. And then you've got, while this is, she's like, literally impaled on a sword, freaking Lilith's over here like, join us.
Yes! So, come to the dark side.
Come to the dark side. We have cookies and creepy men that'll kiss you.
Yeah, you know, he hasn't killed you yet. He's a good guy. I was like,
he hasn't killed you, but he would have if he didn't like you. So you should come hang out with us, have the real power and whatnot, and also you don't really have a choice. Because
No, gaslighting at its finest. But she does have a line that I like where she says, come with me and you can finally be yourself without fear or consequence. Because, like, boom, like, that's really the thing that Lilith is getting out of this creepy relationship with Adriel. Like, he gives her, you know, everybody forgot about her and was like, ew. And then he basically just, like, gave her the autonomy to just be and just thrive as she is.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, that is what she, at the crux, is really getting out of this relationship. She can be herself, do what she wants. She's not judged by him. She's like, Ava, you can have that too. Because, like, literally everybody's been judging you since day one, including me. But, like, come join me and it'll be fine. So
I don't think she wants to be in the creepy guy train.
No, I think that Ava has gone through some growth since she's last really had a chat with Lilith and has found a path that works for her, even though it's a shitty one where she gets impaled by swords, you know?
What's a good sword impaling by former friends?
Yeah, yeah. So, in a nutshell, Ava is not buying what Adriel's selling, basically. And then when Lilith finds out, she's like, well, fuck you then. And I'm going to rip the halo out of your back. Because that's really why I'm here.
Just
like, which is really what Adriel's really after. He's like, yeah, you can come hang out with me, but you're not going to hang out with me? Well, I'm just going to take that shit from your back because I need it.
For your chest, no less.
In the worst possible way. But of course, Ava's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And so she decides to mace Lilith.
Well, first she phases herself back through the suit of armor and the wall, which I thought was super smart, because if you're being if you're impaled on a sword and your former frenemy is taunting you basically and then saying they're gonna kill you, like, I don't know if I would think of phasing backwards into the suit of armor. That was really cool. And yes, she does get ready and, like, use that mace in the best way possible.
I mean, she's smart because she got the element of surprise there. from Lilith, because Lilith then has to phase through the wall and has no idea what's happening. And just, like, what's with all the eye gore that keeps happening in this
season? I don't know.
But is this, like...
Her face was mincemeat after
oh
that.
Oh, my God. It's, like, literal eye for an eye stuff that keeps happening.
Absolutely.
And, like, damn.
Disturbing.
But, disturbing. But brilliant move on Ava's part here. It does get Lilith to back off for a little bit. And, you know, kind of before this whole, like, thing ends... I think before the phasing, Lilith says a line that I really like where she's like, well, you're right about one thing, Ava. You are the last warrior nun.
Yes.
Like, dun, dun, dun.
That line.
I don't know about you, Bree, but I agree with that statement. I think Ava is actually the,
she is the last warrior nun.
I think this all ends with her.
It does.
Yeah.
Something that story ends and then I think something else begins. Not a Catholic church fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, because now we know what what this, we don't know. Now we know that this isn't just like demons attacking from whatever. We know this is something else from another dimension. So there's a level of knowledge. And I think the last warrior nun had to not actually be a nun.
Yeah.
So also I'd like to shout out to the special effects makeup folks for that gruesome ass real looking face after the whole mace thing.
Oh, it was shredded. It was gnarly.
Awful. She's gonna need a facial.
Yeah. Good thing they have healing powers, because that would be the worst.
But yeah. Anything else for that?
That about sums that up.
All right, so from there, we're going to go on over and visit with everyone who's sad right now.
Yeah.
The saddest scene.
Oh, yeah.
A great fight scene to this mess. We've got Jillian and Beatrice leaning over Mother Superior, and they can't do anything else for her. The ambulance is too far away.
Yeah.
And we know what's about to happen. And then you've got Sister Dora just chilling in the back. She's there. No lines. Just hanging out and being hot in the back.
She's like, I don't really know you people that well.
Pretty much. I don't know you and I'm not sure exactly what's going on. I can just tell it's emotional and I'm going to stay back here.
You guys do you.
So Beatrice tells Mother Superior that God will embrace her as his champion. And she's like, well, I don't know about that because I made a lot of mistakes in my life and I've denied God's light. I don't know why I sound like an evangelical preacher right now, but
it's just, that's who Mother Superior is at her final hours, I guess, or minutes.
Yeah. She just talks about how she's resented God and Ava and, you know, and her jealousy over losing the halo, basically. Which is super sad because we know Mother Superior has grown as much as Ava has in her time, like since we met her even, I believe. And so Beatrice like kind of comes back at her by telling her, and I think this is actually a good general line, even if you don't take the God part, like, God won't look over for victories or medals, but for scars. So basically what you've gone through and what you've become as a person is what counts, not you doing everything right. So I think that was a really good line. And of course, Beatrice says it.
Of course.
Because it's Beatrice.
Age old wisdom.
Yep. So Mother Superior tells Beatrice to take care of the girls. Because she's the one.
Yeah.
She's the leader now. She's the only one
she's
left.
She's the most organized. She's like, you know everybody's name. You're probably the best one for this.
They got into the whole bar that they were working at and she became manager in a month. So.
I know. Yeah, she got this.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's when, so Mother Superior dies. Dies-ish. And then, of course, Beatrice does her whole, I'm going to draw this cross on your forehead. And let the Lord that frees you from sin save you. And guess who walks in after coming back from that fight? It's Ava. And she sees what's going on. And you can just tell that seeing Mother Superior in that condition is, he like breaks her a little bit. And so she walks over and gets down on the ground with Mother Superior's body and is crying. And she's like placing her hands over her and is like cuddling her. And she struggles out the word mother. Because this is her, like, she didn't have a mom forever. And then Mother Superior came along and she had a family. Even if the not hot priest was a part of it at first.
Ugh, yeah. This moment was really sad for Ava, and it made me wonder if, like, Ava ever properly got to mourn the loss of her biological parents.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, it went from, like, she was on a trip with her family in Spain to horrific car crash. She was woke up in an orphanage, paralyzed. So I don't know if, like, she ever truly got that mourning period. And, like, here's the passing of a parental figure, like you're saying, and she can actually, like, mourn it and feel all those things in real time.
She was very young when that happened, too.
And yeah.
You don't comprehend that kind of thing when you're that totally young. So I think this is probably, this is a big thing for her in multiple ways. But because the Halo likes miracles, guess what? While she's giving Mother Superior's corpse a cuddle, she comes back.
Yay.
So the halo starts to glow. It gets super bright and it somehow brings Mother Superior back to life. Probably because she bore the halo before it rejected her. And so it could heal Mother Superior through contact with Ava. That's my theory.
Yeah, I mean, in the next scene, she basically says, the halo reached out to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, again, I think it adds to, like, that growing mount of evidence that says that the halo thing is sentient in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not only does it bring her back to life, but it also heals her scar that she has, which is huge.
Yeah.
And she says that she hasn't felt this way since. And then there's, like, a pause, and Ava's like, since it was yours, the halo. And then they have a little hug, and Mother Superior laughs, and it's a whole new Mother Superior. New and improved, or new and back up to snuff.
I think after all this Adriel business is done, Ava can set up a cosmetic business. Like, hate that gnarly scar? Come on down to Ava's cosmetic miracle shop.
Yeah.
Or maybe at minimum she can be like the party healer going forward.
Fabulous. Very cool. Mother Superior.
I was worried.
Comes back in the same scene.
I was worried she was going to die since like the Me beginning too. Of the season. I was like, she going
like,
down.
Surely they're not going to kill her now. Like, this is the episode before last. I mean, it would give Beatrice and Ava like a reason to be super pissed, but still. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that she's alive.
I'm glad that she's alive, too. And I'm glad that Ava didn't lose another surrogate parent. Because she keeps losing all her parental figures. You know, like, at some sad, some, like, for the better. Like, she lost the nun in the orphanage that was watching her, who was abusive. But still, like, parental figure imposed on her. And then the not-hot priest was, like, the deadbeat dad that, like, betrayed her, abandoned everybody. And she lost her actual parents. And now she's, like, losing, like, the one good parental figure. So, like, who made this giant sacrifice for her and everybody else. So I'm glad that that didn't like thank bisexual Jesus that Mother Superior is here to fight another day, because like poor Ava in that moment must have just felt like she was going to be abandoned and alone, or that loneliness, the thing that Ava is really most afraid of. Like, I feel like that's kind of why the voice was cracking and stuff, because it was just like that her biggest fear kind of like playing out. So I'm very glad it didn't, but like poor Ava in that moment, you know.
I agree.
Yeah. So, all right. So next scene, Mother Superior is like at the table with the nuns and is just like glowing. Like, the woman is glowing. Not only is her skin radiant, but, like, her faith has been restored, you know? And all that baggage from the halo rejecting her is finally gone, because she's been kind of lamenting about that. It's partially why she resented Ava. She's like, you don't even fucking want this. Because I think her and Lilith have that kind of in common, where they feel that the halo going to somebody worthy of the halo means a lot in their religion, etc., their group. So I think here she's finally like, it rejected me, you know, but it still loves me because it reached out to me and saved my life, you know. So I think she just has the weight of the world like lifted off of her for once, which I think is really great. It's almost like Mother Superior and the halo made up, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I think this is a big moment for her and like will lead to like character shift, character growth for her, because like the past is in the past now for Mother Superior. Everybody at the table looks so happy for Mother Superior, this glowing mother. Dora, Ava, except Beatrice. Beatrice looks distracted. Her eyes are like glued to her hands. She looks very lost in thought. And I think partially because she is still reeling from the last episode. Our episode 6 discussion from way back when, for more in depth about what she's reeling from. But I think she's still reeling and she's stuck in the past. But notably from the table, two people that are missing are Camilla and Yasmin, because they're presumed to be like dead casualties of the encounter with Adriel. Uh-huh. And, so like a good woman of faith, Mother Superior's like, let us pray for our fallen comrades. And everybody's about to do it except Beatrice, who says, to hell with that. To hell. A swear word. So, you know, Beatrice is majorly triggered by the fact that she's swearing out loud and does not do a sign of the cross. None of that.
Yep.
Something's super bothering her. And truly, she's been having her own crisis of faith for a while now. And she is at her breaking point. And she's like, feels like she's losing everything. She even mentions, she's like, who are we even praying to? Like, Adriel's stealing the prayers. Like, what are we even doing? Like, what is the point, is what she's saying. And she just like storms out of the room. And Ava, like a good lovesick puppy, follows her. So then we end up in this fairy tale looking scene where Beatrice and Ava are out alone on the balcony with this gorgeous golden bathed countryside behind them. And to me, they're setting up the fairy tale moment.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a fairy tale discussion that's going to happen here. That does not pan out, basically. In the scene, Beatrice confesses to Ava that the thing she's so upset about is really, she was compromised. And, she, you know, and we've talked about this before when we first talked about Warrior Nun. It's like Beatrice is like the character you can't compromise on her beliefs, because she believes in what she's doing. She sticks to her morals. She's very disciplined. But Beatrice is compromised by her feelings for Ava. And in the battle with Adriel, her feelings won out over her thoughts and her logic. And she feels like she is responsible for losing the crown of thorns, because she saw it, could have gone for it and ended this. But instead, she stopped Ava from detonating the divinium bomb with Michael and thus killing her in the process. So she chose Ava over like ending, you know, the mission kind of thing, which Beatrice has never done before. Beatrice's mission, no matter what. But in that moment, she knows she broke her own oaths and put somebody, a person, above the OCS, above the mission, above her morals and principles. And so she is beating herself up about that. And Ava points out the obvious. She's like, well, you know, yeah, we may have failed, but like, you saved my life. So is that really a failure? Like, am I not important? So Ava starts reeling immediately. She's like, what are you really saying here? Because I'm scared. And, you know, in the moment, Beatrice acknowledges that she has a bias here. And she's been biased towards Ava all along. Ava's not just her sister, not her comrade, not just the warrior nun. Ava means way more to her because of the way she feels about Ava. And in the moment, Beatrice acted very selfishly and jeopardized the OCS and all of humanity. So that's a lot to, you know, process and deal with. Because, you know, if she would have left Ava to die and left her and Michael to be all Suicide Squad, the world would have been saved, but, you know, Beatrice did what she did because her feelings won out the logic. And so Beatrice is concluding this as a personal failure on her part, which it kind of is, but, you know, it's complicated, like most things in life.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that Ava, on some level, like when the adrenaline of that moment kind of wore off, I think she kind of maybe put the dots together about what Beatrice really did by saving her. Because, you know, in Ava's mind, she's like, I can end this right here and now if I sacrifice myself. But Beatrice stopped her from doing that. So then Ava failed, kind of, by not killing Adriel. So I think she kind of put together what Beatrice really did and kind of why it's a big deal. You know, Beatrice chose her. That's a big deal. And Ava's been, like, pushing and pushing and pushing for signs of Beatrice to, like, reciprocate the feelings. And, like, here it is. It's right here. And poor Ava, like, the pain is just, like, evident on her face as Beatrice is basically telling all this. And Beatrice is, like, kind of, like, doesn't confirm, it kind of confirms it by not, you know, confirming it here, and basically is like, maybe we're just delaying the inevitable here. Like, we can't assume, we are who we are. Like, you're still the warrior nun at the end of the day, and, like, we can't escape our destinies, is what she's saying. Like, it hurts to hear that, like, but it's true, and just, like, poor Ava. Thanks, Caitlin.
Yeah, it's super sad because you can see Ava, like you said, has realized what Beatrice did, and then she's kind of tentatively reaching out with the hoping that they can have a little, like, she can, I think she can tell that Beatrice is pretty much shut down in a way.
She's definitely shutting down.
She's shutting down, and Ava's trying to tentatively be like, but love and gayness.
Yeah, because, like, Beatrice seems like she's given up the fight, mm-hmm. which Beatrice never does, and Ava's alarmed by that. And Ava's at the point where she's like, well, I'm not going to give up without a fight, you know? So, but the irony here is that by not fighting, quote-unquote, Beatrice is fighting. Like, she's doing the harder thing, which is loving the warrior nun, which is what Camilla warned her about. She's like, loving the warrior nun is going to be the hardest thing you're ever going to have to do, because she's not yours, really. She belongs to some cosmic thing that's bigger than you. And I think this is Beatrice's acknowledgement of that. And she's fighting her own wants to do what's best for the world here. Like, she's making that kind of stance. Because of what she said, and then the fact that right after this, we jump into the fantasy moment where, you know, Ava's like, okay, I guess I'll run away like you're telling me, but will you come with me? And then we can relive what we were just doing for 2 months in the Swiss Alps. Like, we could be together, and, like, the halo will be safe like you want, but, and then we can both get what we want. It doesn't have to be the end. Like, that the inevitability of what you're saying doesn't have to be. Like, we can keep going, and
yeah,
but,
and go back to, like, when we were hiding out and
yeah,
we're serving drinks and sharing a bed.
Yeah, but I think Ava's understands why Beatrice is, like, pushing her away and is being like, no, you gotta go, because, like, the halo is the number one priority, you have it, you need to go. But Ava's like, to go and be alone is, then I'm alone, and I don't want to be alone. That's her worst fear. So it's just, it's very sad, because, like, they're set in this, like, fantasy looking, like, scenery. Ava's like, come with me, we could be together. And it's just, like, the bursting of their little bubble that they created over those 2 months, and, like, the finality of that. And Beatrice basically being like, you know, I can't go with you. That's not how this works. Like, we can't have the fantasy. We can't have it all. I just can't. And it's just that rejection.
Yep.
But Beatrice says the words, I can't, here. And I want to put a pin in that for a later Ava Triss conversation that's much heavier, where she uses that same language. Mm-hmm. And that is the scene.
Yeah. We're going to go from that sadness, I guess. I'm going to stay in that. Can't they just have the fairy tale? And then we got to go to Camilla and Todd.
Their banter is cute. Give them that. Cute.
Fine. Fine. I just love Camilla. She's adorable.
She is.
All right. So they're in a cell in the middle of the megachurch of Asriel. And Todd thinks that they should exchange names for morale. And I love that he's trying to, like, shoot his shot while they're
in a torture dungeon.
In the torture dungeon, because that takes some balls.
It does. Like, yeah, gotta give it to him.
I'm going to give him that. And he makes a bad joke about being tied up, but it does make Camilla laugh, and that's what counts. So yeah. As long as he's good to Camilla, he can stay. Basically, they do the whole name exchange. There's another bad joke. I have to admit, maybe my problem with going to the with Todd is because we both make bad jokes. Maybe I'm just seeing myself and Todd. That didn't sound right. Anyway, so they're like, you come here often.
And Camilla, he got the laugh, so it worked.
Like, it's my first time. Kind of sucks.
Yeah. I love that she played along. That was really cute.
She gave her TripAdvisor review of the Asriel Church dungeon.
Would not recommend.
So we just get a little cute scene that tells us that she is still inside there, and Todd is still inside there, and they're being held captive.
Yeah. So, you know, shit's about to go down with the two of them. Yep. And from there, we shoot on over to Jillian and Michael. And before we get too much into this, I just... Why are their scenes together so creepy?
I don't know.
I know it's not supposed to be.
I feel like I'm missing something. Like, why is it creepy to me?
Why is it so creepy when they're together?
There's a line that it crosses that is uncomfortable because it goes to a place where moms and sons shouldn't go. And I don't understand.
Okay. I just wanted to preface this. I'm glad we're on the same page. The scene's creepy. It just has creepy vibes. I only have one.
I'm going to tell them my one note about this scene is I don't care and ew. So.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll just get through this. Okay. With that acknowledged and out of the way. So in the scene, Dr. Salvius is inspecting Michael and all his wounds.
Even that makes me.
It's probably because he's shirtless and it's just weird. And she's like, oh, you're a man now. And I'm like, why are we saying this? It's so weird. I understand he was a child and then the blink of eye, he was an adult. It's still just, the scene is creepy, okay? Anyway. So
it's because it feels like she's looking at him like a piece of meat.
It's gross. Yeah. Ugh. Okay. The important part of the scene is that they talk about Asriel's church and what went down, because she has been obsessing over the tape because she saw, you know, Michael and Ava almost do the Divinian bomb. And she was like, what is this? Because I heard you mouthing or figured out or whatever. You said we'll never get another chance. Like, what on earth do you mean about that? And she asks about that and also acknowledged and picked up on the fact that when he saw Rhea on the tape, something changed in him. And we speculated a bunch about what the hell that was, but I'm glad that she also noticed. She's like, some kind of switch went off when you were looking at her. What the hell is that all about? And he's basically like, doesn't answer that part, which is suspicious. And is essentially like, listen, like the OCS, they mean well, but like this is bigger than them. And if they keep going down this route of thinking they're the ones that are going to stop this, they're not. Like, they're just going to die. And so we're all pawns in whatever the hell this big old Angels and Demons game is, and I am somebody with the capability to stop this because I was chosen by the higher power. So it has to be me, unfortunately. And I'm sorry that our lives suck. And like, no matter what, you can't just have the child you want. You just, you're stuck in this situation with me. So that's kind of like what he's acknowledging. And, I don't know. I think in the scene, I do like the way, basically like, Rhea's plan to me sounds like the opposite of Adriel's approach, because here Michael's almost acting like, I've accepted my fate, I accept that I play a bigger part in this whole thing, and while I don't want to do it, because he was telling Ava like, oh, I was having fun being a Samaritan and being a kid, basically, because he never got to be one, you know, he's accepted the fact that Rhea's my master, I'm gonna do what she says because it's for the greater good, versus like Adriel, who's just like against people's will, just shoving demons in their body and just using fear and violence to control everybody. So I think it's interesting. I think through this conversation and through those kind of like methods, it's like setting up Rhea as a foil for Adriel, which is interesting because we still don't know at this point a lot about Rhea. So, and I think the writers are purposely keeping her shrouded because I think that later on after season two, we'll get more about her. But like from the glimpses we're getting from other characters that have interacted with her, I just find that very, very, very interesting. The way she's almost, like, empowering her, like, peons versus Adriel is, like, intimidating slash co-opting their bodies with his demons kind of thing. So, interesting that they have different approaches like that. All right. But the theme of this this scene is just compassion, because Jillian doesn't want to lose her son, because as she points out, you've sacrificed enough, and truly they've all sacrificed everything for the whims of these interdimensional beings. And just like Beatrice, Jillian kind of blames herself, always. Like, she's, since day one, has just blamed herself about Michael's fate. Like, everything is her fault and her, like, moral failing kind of thing. But, you know, he reassures her that, like, you know, we're pawns in an ancient game. What are we gonna do? And finally, at the end of the scene, Michael gives his mom what she wanted all along, which is just validation and gratitude. Because, like, that's all she wanted, like, you know, from her son. Mm-hmm. Who she's been, like, obsessed about finding and keeping safe. And he finally, like, validates her, which is, like, to me, the key of this whole scene. Besides him, like, healing himself with divinium. I think that's, like, the main point of the scene.
Right. Yay.
They gotta wrap their shit up because things aren't gonna end well for them.
No. I like
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's gonna end well for many people in this show.
I mean, when interdimensional beings are battling, it's there will be casualties.
We are their fodder.
Yes. That's the other point of that scene.
Yep.
Well said.
So, Camilla and Todd, again.
Again.
Back to Camilla and Todd. He's still going. Like, how'd you end up here? And I love Camilla's answer because it's what I would say. I loved it so much. Well, I got in the van.
They're both dorks.
They're both dorks, and I love it.
Yes.
So she goes into a little bit of her backstory, which thank God we finally get this.
I know. We were talking about that before season two. We're like, hopefully we'll get Camilla's backstory. And yeah. Like, boom, here it is.
So her dad died when she was really young, and she and her mother were left with nothing. So she realized how much her mother was struggling to provide for both of them and to keep her safe and whatnot, and so Camilla decided to join the convent. And that's like what kid makes is like, yeah, I guess I'll go become a nun, so I'll be taken care of and my mom doesn't have to worry about me.
Yeah, she was 15.
She was
15, and her
I was not that selfless at 15.
Yeah, her motivation is like, I see the burden my mother's under for caring for me. Let me take me out of the equation so she has less to worry about. Like, wow. What a story to flesh out this character.
I know. Love it. So, basically, And then comes the joke about convent food. So you did it for the food. And she's like, no, that would have been a mistake. So now we know the grub's not so great. She said that she did it for service, but found much, much more love, peace, and acceptance. So that's her OCS sisters.
Yeah.
And some ass-kicking lessons, apparently.
And she got a harem.
She did get a harem. They're all dead now.
But hey, she had one.
She did. Little Camilla. So the banter that we're enjoying ends abruptly when some guards come in and take Todd.
Yeah.
Camilla fights them until one of them hits her with a stun wand.
Yeah.
What I'll call it. And he's like, I'll go with you. Just leave her alone. And so they take him. And I'm like, well, that's not good at all. And then my brain automatically goes to, what are they going to do with him? Well, the only logical thing I can think of, and it happens later. So,
yeah. I do like the scene, though, like the end with Camilla and Todd, because it shows the similarities between the two of them.
Yeah, it does.
Because, you know, Camilla's story was basically like, I saw my mother was in trouble and I sacrificed myself basically to save her. And like with Todd, he doesn't give himself up to like the goons until they start going after Camilla. And he's like, leave her alone. Just take me, kind of thing. Yep. So like they both have that in common, their ability to sacrifice themselves to help others, kind of thing, which I thought was cute. It like, I don't know. I hope he's okay.
Dorky sense of humor.
Yeah. And their dorky sense of humor. Also cute. I hope he's okay at the end for her sake. But, all right, so we're going to leave the creepy-ass dungeon and cut on over to Ava and Beatrice's bedroom. It's canon. I don't care what the fuck anybody else says. And Ava is sitting alone on the bed, shrouded in shadows, and her fingers are just lightly tracing the bed sheets along the edge where the sunlight meets the shade. And personally, I think Beatrice, a lot of
side of the bed.
Yes, I think a lot of things are running through her mind, including the fact that that is Beatrice's side of the bed, and she's upset that Beatrice, she might lose Beatrice pretty soon in like one way, shape, or form, depending on how this fuckery plays out. Yeah, that's Beatrice's side of the bed. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah, she's having Beatrice thoughts and end of the world thoughts. So, yeah.
Guess who comes in?
Well, not Beatrice. Definitely not Beatrice. Unfortunately, it's Michael, who just got back from that creepy convo with his mom, and he apologizes to Ava for basically everything. Mm-hmm. And they're like, cool, are we on the same page, Suicide Squad? And they're like, yeah. And Ava's like, wait a minute. I don't know. I've had some time to think about this, and you know, there's got to be another way besides us blowing each other into smithereens for whatever the hell this is all about. Like, Rhea's plan can't be that great. And Michael says, listen, don't be afraid. Accepting death can lead to enlightenment. And Ava rightfully calls out this bullshit as Rhea propaganda. That's probably, like, how she got him on board with this. And she's like, fuck that. I've been dead. And I can tell you, there's literally nothing. There's no glory. There's no afterlife reward. There's nothing. There's nothing. So, like, don't try to sell me on this shit. Because I've been there. Been there, done that. And Ava, too, like, definitely rightfully is, like, questioning this plan. Because she just got her life back and does not want to lose it. And she's just started to finally live her life in this season and see the possibilities of having a life with love and a mother figure and all the things she was denied from the car accident, basically.
What Michael says also sounds super culty.
Literally all of his language in this conversation is very, very, very culty. But he does make the point of like, yeah, I understand that you want to like be around the people you love and like not sacrifice yourself in that way, but like if we don't do it and everybody dies, then what was the point of anything? You know, we're gonna lose either way, kind of thing. Like the world could go down in flames and we're all fucked. So, and deep down, I think that Ava is afraid of that too. That was partially her motivation for trying to do the suicide bomb in the other episode, where she's like, yeah, if Adriel fucks up the world, everybody's fucked. Let us just sacrifice ourselves so everybody else can live. Mm-hmm. Or, and in her mind, at the very least, Beatrice can like live her life and be free if Ava does the sacrifice. But yep. I think at this point, she isn't at that acceptance stage anymore. I think she's still reeling from the conversation with Beatrice, and she doesn't really want to give up on having it all. So she's still trying to think of another way out of this, and that's when her brain is kind of like, hey, memory time. During that kerfuffle, you remember when the not hot priest took the crown of thorns? Maybe we should go after that, because remember, that was a huge deal. We had to get Yasmin and do a heist, and that thing's probably important. So she's like, listen, I'm not going to throw away my shot quite yet. I got to find the not hot priest and that crown of thorns. And she like pieces out of there.
Yeah. Speaking of the not hot priest.
I hate speaking of the not hot priest.
Yeah, me too. Wait, at the end of that scene, wasn't Beatrice like
hovering?
She was chilling on the other side of the door, basically, but the curtain kind of hiding and listening to this convo.
Was that this convo? Or
was that this convo?
Was that the last episode when they were making the plan to do the suicide bomb? I think it was the last episode.
I think it was the last episode.
But yeah, anyway. This one was just, I got to go after the priest, and like it kind of just
my
ends
mind
with
that Beatrice is always near Ava.
Beatrice
so.
Was, you know, Ava was having Beatrice thoughts. That's her side of the bed.
Yeah. I was having Beatrice thoughts. Anyway. Yeah. Back to the not hot priest, where there is no Beatrice and no hotness to be had.
No. Well, Ava shows up, so there's that later.
Well, yeah, true. But like at this moment, there is none, because all we've got are goons with hockey sticks and the not hot priest.
Okay, can we talk about the way this beginning of the scene doesn't make any fucking sense?
Thank you.
I love that they're like, non-believer, blah, 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 prove to us that you're fine. First of all, he's in the sun and not sizzling. And second of all, immediately after this, they're like, oh, your eminence, I'm sorry. Like, how did they not know who he was?
What? Did they?
What?
Are they blind in the beginning of the scene?
Yes.
Or something? Like, they can't see that he's not frying and who he is.
Right. What is the scene?
I don't understand.
I don't understand it at all. Like, it's this scene
just
was
to
weird.
Show us.
They're
just to set up this scene and
I guess
set up Adriel's
to show us that his cult has moved into fascism and they're like being violent towards the others, I guess. But like it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
No. Anyway.
God runs their way. Not the important part of the scene, but something that stuck out.
Yeah.
So like you said, they recognize him after a minute, I guess.
I know. So weird.
Maybe the secret not hot priest signal went on above his head.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, I should know who you are. Whoops.
Yeah.
Don't tell Adriel, I don't want to get fired.
Yeah. I'd have to give my hockey mask back.
Right.
Your eminence, forgive me. And I'm like, what is he, a cardinal now? a cardinal in Adriel's?
I know. How high up is he really in this organization?
Right.
You didn't know who he was 3 seconds ago.
Precisely. So he walks along after this encounter and he sees a mural of Adriel. Almost a Muriel.
A Muriel. For some reason.
A Muriel's wedding of this old movie. Anyway, moving on. A mural of Adriel and with Ava floating down to him. So it's like a fallen angel type of, it's an interest. I like this. This art is something I would have. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's standing there looking at this and then he reaches towards it into the light and it burns him. So not hot priest is not a believer. Ava walks up next to him and they stand in silence for a moment. And she's like, is that me?
Yeah, girl.
Yeah, girl, you deserve to be on a mural. In fact, can we just get rid of Adriel and you can have your own mural?
That'd be great.
I believe Beatrice would pay visits.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, he says you've made an impression. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's Ava.
That she was on worldwide television.
Yeah.
That's where this came from.
So he wants to know, he's like, how'd you find me? And Ava goes, last time I saw you, it looked like you had some thinking to do. And the nearest, and that's the nearest bar to Adriel's Cathedral. So she's logic girl.
Yep.
As we said in that earlier scene, she's smart and she knows that the alcoholic's going to go to the bar. So she said, she points out that the light spares Adriel's believers and is just saying, oh, so you're not a believer anymore. Okay, well, now we know. Not Hot Priest has turned against his cult leader. Could you have done this back before you broke him out? But hey, whatever. She then confronts him about the crown, and he pulls it out of his jacket. So she asks why he didn't give it to Adriel, and he's like, well, I was hoping against hope. And she's like, so was I. And then they just both look at the mural again. So she's found the Not Hot Priest. He's not on Adriel's side anymore. And she's now got the crown.
Yeah. I just want to point out a couple of things from that scene. First of all, to evade the sun, Ava's got her hat on again. Uh-huh. But it's not backwards. So that's a travesty. But I understand why it has to be front-facing to hide her from the sun. So there's just that. Secondly, the Not Hot Priest, when his hand starts a sizzling, so he's in the sun the whole time, which is weird. So he's like not 100% off of the Adriel train. He's just his commitment to Adriel, a belief in Adriel rather, is a wavering. And the point at which his hand starts, he starts burning is when his hand reaches for the image of Ava. So I find that interesting. So it's almost like in that moment is when he was really questioning and leaning so much that the Rays were like, fuck, shun the non-believer. So that's what happened there.
Just didn't do it, Charlie. Charlie the Unicorn.
Yes.
Caitlin's going to kill you.
I know. Shun the non-believer.
Shun the non-believer.
So that's what happened. Candy Mountain. He should go to Candy Mountain for real.
He should go to Candy Mountain.
Like, for real. Like, just go on. Just figure out what's out there, Not Hot Priest. We won't miss you.
And stay in Candy Mountain. And but anyway.
I have one last comment about the graffiti. Because I think the graffiti itself is really interesting. So the image comes from, obviously, the big televised showdown with the Pope, where Ava was, like, coming down to, like, put the crown on Adriel, basically. And I think it's interesting that on the mural, it describes Ava as an angel, because Adriel's cult calls him an angel. So I think this depiction, which we all know he's not, he's some being that came from another dimension and it fucked up everything, but I think this is hammering home the point that was really started in season one, is that we humans don't have language really for what is actually happening with this big interdimensional battle. And so we're just like labeling things with terms we know. Mm-hmm. And also, if this whole thing catches on and we do keep labeling this, it's like an angel versus angel situation, which is interesting. And so I wonder if this plays out and like Ava being framed as an angel catches on, like how the public at large will like take that. Cause like I've come to realize through going through a panini and living in America in the current times that like the truth is what people believe, not necessarily what is reality and the truth. So I just wonder how that would get framed if like Ava is an angel and like Adriel is an angel.
Right.
And like how that would change faith and stuff like that in the world at large. Just that's interesting to think about. Yeah.
I think this whole season is an interesting question in that.
For sure. So also cool graffiti. Whoever did that, shout out to you.
Yeah. Shout out to that artist.
Shout out to you. So we leave the graffiti and head back to the lab where Jillian is telling Michael her hypothesis of where the Ark is, because remember that shit went missing and that's why Mother Superior almost died.
And can I interrupt you for one?
Yes. Second.
I have a problem. My problem is that if you put their names together, Jillian and Michael, you get Jillian Michaels.
Yes, I would rather these be scenes with Jillian Michaels.
This is the only way we get to gay with these two.
Right.
I'm sorry. Okay, back to the scene.
Yeah, so Jillian Michaels is talking about where the Ark is. And Jillian is like, listen, that cathedral I paid for and accidentally sponsored is really designed to funnel prayer energy, because that's what it's doing. And it comes from the roof. She figured that out with her spyglasses. And it seems like, from what I can tell, all the prayer energy is being funneled to that really creepy cross in the middle, and it's like going somewhere. And so they follow the energy conduction, and they're like, well, it can only be one place, which is down. So it's probably underneath this building, directly below that, which like is on brand for Adriel, because his first church was underground also. So makes sense. That's what Yaz told us 1,000 years ago. Adriel's not super creative, so he's probably doing the same thing. So boom, they know where the Ark is, and now everybody's just got to go get it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Jillian Michaels knows. Forever changed in my mind. Anyway.
But to be fair, that scene with them wasn't actually creepy. That was a good scene with the two of them.
That was a good scene. Yeah. It was the only not creepy scene that I can remember between them.
Me too. Is that one.
But, yeah. So let's go hang out with Camilla. And Todd's back. But not really. Todd's possessed.
He is. He's not okay.
Todd has got negative Todd energy and all demon energy going on right now. Whatever these creatures are that are inhabiting people. So basically what they're doing is they're taking these prisoners and they are possessing them with the creatures, and he's here to take Camilla out for the same treatment, which I call and have deemed demon with a dash of lime. Ooh. So
don't go to happy hour for that.
Don't go to demon with a splash of lime happy hour. Please. That is, they give it to you for free.
Yeah, it's no cost. Like it. The demons are the only one happy at the end of that hour.
Pretty much. So, turns out there's a twist, because the other guard that was with Todd was Yasmin all along.
Hey! Yay! When are Camilla and Yasmin getting a spinoff?
I know.
They want it.
They could be a really good mystery solving.
I know. With duo. Their hot pink van. It'd be great.
Yeah, so it's Yasmin. She's back. She's been in there the whole time, just lurking around. She smacks Todd with a dash of lime on the head with the baton. And reveals herself. And she's like, hi, Camilla.
It's me.
It's me. Hi. I am not the problem.
No, it's him.
I'm the solution. He's the problem.
He's the problem.
So they hug, and she couldn't get out when everybody else escaped, so she hid, and then she tried to find a way to get to Camilla.
Kudos to her, because Yasmin was not trained to do missions the way like Camilla was, and she survived undetected in that demon haunting of a house. So like, kudos to her.
And we're seeing, I like the, even with everything else going on, we do get this evolution with Yasmin about her starting as someone who just researches all of this stuff and is really excited about it, to someone who is owning their own, like, getting in the action and becoming a sister of the OCS. Mm. And it's like Camilla has a junior nun to...
Yeah. Because Camilla shepherd. Was the junior before.
She was. So Camilla has her own little intern, shall we say, an OCS intern. Which we find adorable. Mm-hmm. I love it.
I love them.
Yasmin is adorable. They're both just the best. So
they are.
She apologizes for being late, and Camilla is like, no, you're right on time. I'm like, yeah, because Todd just came back with
a dash of lime.
Yeah, with a dash of lime, and tried to possess you. So they check on Todd, and he's alive. Apparently, a seminary didn't prepare Yasmin for hitting people in the head. Yeah, but you're good at it, so I guess...
Keep doing it.
Keep it up, girl. Camilla will teach you how to fight. And she informs Camilla that there was some kind of ritual in the main hall that happened to Todd. So she saw what happened to Todd and probably, you know, kind of followed him back to where Camilla was. Mm-hmm. But they go and sneak into this main hall to watch Creepy Christian, trademarked, baptize a baby in the name of Adriel, which means aka possess it with a demon.
Yeah.
Well, baby dark. Listen, I'm not a child person. And so this is what I assume every child looks like. To be honest.
Like, fair.
Full demon eyes.
I mean, I feel like happy hours really should be 21 and up, and you guys should have stuff with that you. In your church. What the fuck?
Adriel does not go in for age limits, apparently. So he's giving limes out like there's nobody's business.
Yeah, and the writers are very much using this as a big old metaphor for religious indoctrination of children and social commentary. So well done, talented writers room there. Yeah.
Pay them more.
Pay them more. And one last thing I want to say about this scene or comment on is Christian. And how much do you want to bet that he is the only person in this church that is not possessed by a demon?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like, he's doing all this shit because he's just naturally brainwashed.
Yeah, he's creepy all on his own.
And he's, like, if you look at him in the scene, he's just, like, like, just so happy that they're just indoctrinating children because he genuinely believes in this. And
yeah.
I think, to me, that's scarier than people being possessed by demons and acting happy about this, you know?
It is. Mm-hmm. Because he has free will, and he's sitting here
choosing to do this.
Choosing to get babies drunk with demons.
And social commentary is all I'm going to say. Good job, writers. Give them a raise. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is happy hour over?
Yeah, thank Christ.
Thank Christ. Thank bisexual Jesus. All right.
Thank bisexual Jesus that we've come to the next scene.
Yeah, speaking of bisexual Jesus. So while that's all happening, Ava is shoving the not hot priest into her room. And she's like, you need to... Which
sounds so bad.
She's like, listen, shut the fuck up and do what I say. Because if anyone gets a whiff that you're here, they'll kill you. And by others, she definitely means Beatrice.
Yes, she does.
And I would have liked to watch that, personally.
No, I want a ticket to that show.
Right. And so no one catches them, unfortunately, for our amusement. But they clear the air here a little bit because there's been some tension since he betrayed everybody. So he expresses that, you know, he acknowledges he did some fuckery, and he acknowledges that and admits the thing that broke his allegiance to Adriel was the fact that Adriel claimed the Pope was killed by God. When, like, he knew full well that Adriel is the one that was like, yeah, flip the switch and fry him. So he was like, you're not God. Like, I understand you now that you're just some imposter with powers. And not really an angel. You are not a messenger. You're not the next coming of Christ or whatever. You're just some dude. He is no God. So that's when he's like, yep, I fell for it. And Ava's like, yep, he's just a man. Like, which is what we've been saying the whole podcast. The Nighthead priest is like, yeah, I get that. But hard lesson for a priest to learn. Mm-hmm. You know. But we're all learning some lessons, you know. He, I think, at this point kind of senses that Ava is also having a crisis of faith because it's, like, wafting off of her. And he transitions the conversation basically from him to, like, a pep talk for Ava. Because, you know, he saw the writing on the wall in the church, with the way everything went down with the battle with Adriel, and it did not go well. And I think he kind of relates to that, you know, feeling of just, like, utter failure. And he says, you know, he felt broken. He feels broken in mind, body, and soul, and, like, he's just hit some rock bottom, but he has hope because of Ava, and he saw Ava fight back with Adriel, and like the way that people are rallying, basically, whether she knows or not, by evidence by the graffiti, he's like, yeah, maybe since Adriel really isn't what he seems to be, maybe he's not that good. Here's the antithesis, you know, she has a chance. He's afraid of her. She's, you know, the hope all along, which great, but like, bruh, we're in this situation because of you. You know, and Ava is not buying this like pep talk he's given. She's like, I've heard this song before. I don't like the ending. All these foolish men that are just useless as hell and are trying to like use her, a capable woman, to clean up their mess and save them from their own bullshit. And like, that's what's been happening for like millennia in real life. And Ava's like, I'm not having this. You let the devil loose. This is all your fucking fault. Like, own up and like take responsibility for this shit. And personally, I am not a Vincent apologist. I've never been one. I think this man did actual harm of his own free will and deserves actual consequences for his actions. I'm tired of it. But like, in real life, the mediocre white men will face no consequences whatsoever and get away with unleashing literal hell on earth while the rest of us suffer. And I hate it here. Yes. And so does Ava. But like, Not High Priest is like, you know, I know, seriously though, I'm sincere though. I changed my mind. I've chosen you over Lilith. It's going to be great. You, only you can restore the world, Ava. And Ava comes back and says, I don't really care what you believe in. I just need a way to end this bullshit that you created and defeat Adriel without risking the lives of the people that I love. So yes, queen, absolutely. Thank you for reading this man to filth. Somebody needed to. Yeah. And second of all, did you say love? Who do we love? Ava?
Yeah. Ava.
I need you please elaborate. To
be more specific.
Yeah, like, we need some names or name.
We need one name.
I need one name. Just saying.
Admit it.
Just saying. So. Okay, we'll put that
this
in that
a safe space.
This is a safe space. He's a priest. You can confess things to him. It's fine. It's fine. We're not listening. We're listening. Please tell us. Anyway, so the Not-Head Priest is like, yeah, okay, cool. If you really are down with defeating him, the key is the crown, because there's something in the nature of the crown that he fears.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of like wondered, like, what exactly is Adriel afraid of with the crown? Like, obviously it comes from the other dimension, so it has powers, but I wonder if it has like a connection to Rhea and that's what he's afraid of, or it's something like the Halo where it's sentient and it's like beyond even like what Rhea can do. I don't know, it seems like there's more to this crown that we get in the entire season and what it's actually capable of doing, because like he seems to be afraid of two things: Rhea, for obvious reasons, and then this crown. So I just find that really interesting, and I'm very curious about that.
And it seems like he's afraid of it beyond the scope of it being able to incapacitate him.
Yeah, exactly.
To the point where maybe it would let Rhea control him or read his thoughts or something.
Totally. Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, so, exactly. I'm with you.
Because we see what happens to Ava when she puts the crown on.
Yeah, she goes into this like third space where they get to talk or whatever, or see the future. I don't even really know for sure, but like, but what happens to Ava later is like nothing bad happens to her, so
yeah.
The fact, I think there's more to it than we're seeing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, yeah, it just,
you don't,
it's
have
very
a complete picture yet.
Exactly. I agree with you. I think it goes beyond the incapacitating and beyond what we see with Ava to make him afraid, which I find interesting.
Yes, me too.
The other piece of the scene that's important, so we speculated on this a very long time ago. We're like, how on earth did the Not-Hot Priest get corrupted by Adriel? Were there whisperings happening? And he confirms in the scene that he has divinium tattoos, which, like, where did he get divinium to, like...
Thank
isn't
you.
It a rare metal? Like, how did he even get the materials to make the tattoos?
He did know, he did know that dude that was, like, dealing in black market religious artifacts, so... Probably through that network.
Yeah, that's a good point. Black market deals. Yeah. But anyway, he has divinium tattooed into his arms, and Adriel is communicating through the tattoos. And Ava's like, well, that's interesting. This is communication's a two-way street, and she like grabs his arms.
Basically, he's a telephone.
She's gonna text Adriel.
No, who wants to text Adriel?
Oh. No one.
Oh man. Anyway, that's fun.
It
using
sure
not hot priest as a conduit. So, speaking of calling Adriel, that's where we're going, unfortunately, because apparently Adriel needs Christian is now Adriel's, I don't know, secretary, bitch, all of the above. And he's, I guess, I don't know if he dictated this to him or if he's just doing a beta read of
what
it.
What in the AO3 is this?
What
is
this? Yeah, this is not a fan fiction I would read.
No, this is like Adriel's Jesus fan fiction, I think.
Adriel
is what this
would
is
write a fan fiction about himself.
That's like, what I mean. On. He's like, yep, that's the new Bible.
Exactly. No, exactly. Type that's what up. It is. This is the new yeah Bible. And Christian has like gotten it down on paper for him.
Yeah.
And he's like, spread my word to the world. I'm like, you need to be taken down a peg or 39.
Burn that is what I'm saying.
Yeah, please burn that book. It is. I was not in favor of burning books except this one.
Yeah, I think there are more cursed works on AO3 yeah that are less harmful for humanity than whatever this book is.
I also just don't think that. I also, I'm not even going to call it a book because it's not. It's Adriel's fan fiction.
Yes.
We don't want it. So there should be a trigger warning.
Yes.
But basically, he's like, spread my word and the people will be enthralled. Shut the fuck up.
Oh, my God.
You're an idiot.
Literally.
So that's when we get the phone call coming in, or more like a Star Trek phone call. I don't know.
Yeah, it's greeny, you know, early technology.
It's like a, yeah, it's like that holographic yeah projection thing in yes Star Wars. So Shimmery Vincent shows up looking, you know, super fab with his gold shimmer going on. So he recognizes him, unlike the fucking dudes earlier. And it's like, oh, it's my minion. What the fuck you doing?
Which, like, why doesn't he think it's weird that, like, yeah, he's astral projecting to him? Why is that not weird?
Thank you. Anyway, I guess he's just...
Does anybody know anything about the Not Hot Priest? Because, like, the goons didn't yeah know who he was. And then Adriel's like, oh, look, you came to visit me. Like, you need the power, like, your specific powers to make this possible. And he doesn't think this is weird.
Yeah, thank you. I don't want
to... I don't get it.
But the... Anyway. Vincent showing up has a side effect, which we're a fan of.
Yes.
This is the only thing the Not Hot Priest is a part of that I'm down for, because it makes Adriel get a migraine.
Yeah, his migraine-inducing powers. Well done. Yes.
I mean, he gives me a migraine, too, so I guess. Yeah. So Adriel, like, puts his fingers to his temple, and he falls to his knees, so this is a pretty dramatic effect it's having on him.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, did you expect Adriel to do, like, not be
drama
super
queen,
secretly
no
dramatic?
Yeah. On the other side of the phone call, Ava falls to her knees as well, so this is draining her halo power.
Yeah.
And probably a fuck ton, because astral projecting Not Hot Priest has got to be quite a chore.
Yeah, I mean, she's never done it before, too, so, like, yeah you know.
This is her first try.
Yeah.
Go, Ava.
Mm-hmm.
So, then Adriel's, like, groaning as we see the divinium tattoos melt out of the Not Hot Priest's arms, and Adriel yells, get out of my head, and we get whatever power he's pushed at the projection, and Ava's blown away from the Not Hot Priest. It looks like a halo blast almost. So
yeah, it does a little bit.
It's like him pushing his power back against hers.
Yeah, to push her off of.
And exactly, yeah. And she's drained, so
right
she can't fight that. And then Creepy Christian tries to help Adriel up, and he's like, fuck off! This is like...
He's like, this little bitch.
I can't remember this actor's name, but he is so good at acting creepy and subservient. Oh my God. He's like a little ghoul or something. But he clutches his fan fiction and like, walks away.
He does.
Like, it's precious, my precious. Oh my He's God. Gollum.
So.
Yeah, so... Then we come back and we see the Not Hot priest's arms are all bloody because the divinium has come through his skin and melted out of him. Adriel, like we said earlier, is afraid of the crown, something inside of it, some truth, but she couldn't quite see. Of course.
Of course, because mystery and drama.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, we were so close.
Then she asks question, and I hate that this question is what comes to her mind right now, but do you think embracing death can lead to enlightenment?
No. I know. I hate that she repeats back Michael's words.
Do not repeat the cult words.
No. It's literally cult language. Stop it.
Run away from Nexium.
God.
This is you're going to end up in a sex, Adriel sex cult.
Or a death cult is more like it.
Yeah, death cult. But anyway. Yeah.
Ugh, I hate it.
So she's holding the crown and activating it. And I'm like, no, Ava.
Especially like unsupervised with this guy as your only witness to this. You know,
Rhea,
something goes wrong.
That's the thing is both sides of this. I don't care if you're on Adriel's side or Rhea's side or whatever. They're both super culty.
Yeah.
And
no,
there's
are.
No good side here, and that's the point. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable and nervous, and I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, nailed it, but
I nailed it. Welcome to be happy and making out on the interesting side of the bed. Sorry, what?
Yeah, I mean, we can only dream. Maybe that's what's in the crown. We'll find out later.
Perhaps
it's just Ava's dreams. All right, so while all that cult bullshit and fan fiction is happening, Mother Superior is chilling on the couch, like living her best life, and she gets a call from Camilla. Camilla's like, listen, I'm alive, Yaz is here, but everything is not great. There's a creepy cult here, there's a fan fiction Bible, it's straight up blasphemy, you guys, you need to get the OCS here now. And then she just hangs up. She like leaves no room for Mother Superior to like get details. It's just, we're at the church, get us. And Mother Superior whips around to Beatrice and Dora, who are in the background. She's like, get the sisters ready. And I'm like, what sisters? They're the only ones in the room.
What sisters?
What sisters?
Can you see something that we can't see? Are there reserve sisters? Do we have like the B team somewhere?
Yeah, do we have to activate the OCS reserves from like the other churches? But anyway, regardless of that, I want to just point, that's the whole scene, but I want to point out something I noticed here, because like Mother Superior is just on the couch chilling, and like Beatrice is like lurking in the background, and I've noticed she's been doing a lot of lurking this season where she's just like eavesdropping on people, like a lot. It just happens a lot, you know.
She's taking in information, and
yeah, she's got to get intel somehow.
She's really good at her job, so it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, just...
She's somewhat unassuming.
She is.
Very smart. Anyway, yeah. So, let's go over to bisexual Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Or pansexual Jesus. We're not sure. We'll go with the four mentioned. Ava is on... the bed that she shares with Beatrice. I don't care. That's what we're calling it forevermore.
Yep.
The bed they share. So she's got the crown on, and she's being guarded, watched, whatever, by the Not Hot priest. He's got bandages all over his arms now. Like, did he just like sit down and perfectly bandage himself? Like while she was off
while she's unconscious?
The third world? But the way he's standing is, like, super weird. I don't know, like, sit down or something, bro.
Also, knowing him, she probably put the crown on, and he's like, cool. And then he left her to go find bandages.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's negligent.
What a...
I hate him.
Yeah. So, the gang comes in, and Dora pulls her gun on the not-hot priest, and I'm like, yes!
Finally!
Finally! However, unfortunately, she doesn't shoot him. And Michael goes to take the crown off of Ava, but the not hot priest stops him. And as soon as he puts his hand on Michael, I'm like, why didn't, like, if I would just assume that someone would be like, that Michael would have had more of a reaction to that.
I know. Everybody is very, like, what I find really weird about this scene compared to, like, where the finale picks up is that everybody in this scene is really calm, but in the next scene, their emotions ramp up to 100 with how angry they are at the priest. And I'm like,
They walk in and Not Hot Priest is there and they're acting like he's always been there or something.
Right.
I'm like, what?
Why is everyone except Dora calm?
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, Beatrice has a look of murder in her eyes, but nobody is, like, reacting appropriately for this situation based on the knowledge they know right now, which is, like, the crown incapacitates Ava and makes her useless, you know?
Exactly.
It's weird.
And I get Beatrice not... Okay. So, I know that it's very Beatrice-like to ask questions first. And we've seen in the scenes before that she's getting to this point where she's not going to act on her emotions.
Right. True.
So, we have that. But, Ava, the warrior nun's in danger. Like, she's...
Right.
All you walk in and you see she's incapacitated with the crown and Not Priest is creepy standing over her.
Yeah, the guy that betrayed all of them and caused this problem in the first place. So, like, yeah, like, at first glance, this looks really bad, like, logically.
Yeah, my first reaction is, weird. Somebody go to Ava, somebody restrain Not Hot Priest.
Yes, stop whatever this is.
Like, chill and ask questions.
And listen to him.
And listen to the Not Hot Priest.
This scene
is weird. Listen after you have gotten the situation under control.
Exactly. That would make sense from, like, an operations
team.
Like, their actions here are very strange.
Like, Michael...
Out of character, almost.
Michael's not an OCS agent, so he doesn't, like, have that kind of training. But he didn't react... Like, Dora's the only one. And
Dora's the only one that reacts appropriately, yeah.
And Dora's gonna defer to Beatrice, obviously. And I also like that Michael defers to Beatrice in this situation.
She's the boss. She's proven that on so many occasions. She's the boss. He knows it. He's given up. He's like, you're in charge. I get it.
Because when the Not Hot Priest stops Michael from taking the crown off, he's like, Beatrice?
Yeah. Boss, what do we do?
Exactly. I loved that so much.
Yes. I appreciate that aspect.
So, basically, he asks her what to do, and she's like, she doesn't know. And so, what she does know, after the Naha priest is like, she chose this, she put it on herself. And I do think that Beatrice knows that Ava would be crazy enough to go find the Naha priest and put the crown on. So, I do think that from that standpoint, she would... at least entertain that Ava has done this to herself, because it's very Ava-like behavior.
She is pretty reckless sometimes. Yeah.
So aside from the initial reactions, the Beatrice's assessment after everything's explained does make sense to me. I will give it that. We go to Ava, who is in the dark third place. It almost feels like a place that's between the dimensions.
Yeah,
a limbo of sorts.
I'm thinking purgatory, like it's a purgatory metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an in-between, like you said.
Chilling in purgatory and trying to figure out what she saw. What is Adriel afraid of? Right. How can she defeat Adriel? That's why she's here. And who shows up but some Taras demons. And there's a bunch of them. There's a shit house full of Taras demons.
There sure are. A whole squad.
And they're just staring her down. And her response is, come on then.
So I wonder too if part of what... I wonder if Adriel knows... Because, all right, I'm trying to organize my thoughts. So with the purgatory situation, of putting the crown on. Mm-hmm. I wonder if in that realm it exposes the halo, the person in purgatory, to Rhea. Because, like, the Tarrasque demons are really extensions of Rhea.
Right, exactly.
So I wonder if that's what he's afraid of being exposed to Rhea. And that's partially what the crown does. I wonder if she created it. Because remember, she's the one that gave it to Ariel. I was like, here you go. So I wonder if it's linked to her somehow, like, in a sentient way, the way, like, the halo is kind of sentient. Like, it, like, reports to her, basically, or the Tarrasque, her minions, or whatever.
Yeah, no, so, I could totally, since they can track the halo.
Yeah, because, like, they find Ava immediately when she's in that purgatory place. They're like, oh, hello.
He stole it from Rhea, so.
Right. It was Rhea's.
This is all her shit, and she has, it's her super-duper technology, right, so she can feel it wherever it is.
Yeah, I think whatever she is in their dimension, she is definitely more powerful and has more powers than him.
Yeah.
It's plausible that she can create things.
Michael says at one point that he was, or whoever says at some point that he was basically her servant.
I think it was Michael, probably. Yeah, exactly. He's like the uprising, throwing over the...
Yeah. Or at least that's her word.
Yeah, you know, that's her version of the story. Exactly. So, yeah.
And that was the end. We get the... Ava just like, well, okay then. Let's go.
This is happening.
Tarrasque demons!
That's so Ava. This was the shortest episode in the season, too.
Yeah.
Which was weird, but setting up the finale.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. So, with episode 7, how many shots for By Jesus would you take for this episode?
6. They didn't kill Mother Superior, that saved. So that's, I'm going to take away points for Beatrice shutting Ava down, because that just makes me sad.
Ugh, yeah.
And then I just have to add points for Dora being there and existing. And being the only one to have a sensible reaction to the not hot priest.
Agreed. Yeah. I think a 6 is fair. Not enough gay stuff happened, but for me to give it higher. But enough happened to put it past the 5. Like, Ava and Beatrice had a conversation that was a good one, but it was sad, like you said. Camilla and Yaz, we got them being cute. There was too much of the not hot priest and too much Christian and the creepy scenes with Jillian Michaels.
And also infecting the baby.
And our demon happy hour that's not so happy.
Don't want it.
No, I don't want it. I don't want it in real life either.
This is not the version of painting with a twist that I want.
No, nobody asked for any of that. So it loses points because of all of that.
Exactly.
But overall, good episode for setting up the finale, I think, where, absolutely, like, there's conflict that needs to be resolved, that they're, like, being like, remember all of this before going into, like, the conclusion / end, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta have Not Hot Priest come back to switch sides again.
Yeah, he's the worst, honestly.
Freaking flip-floppers.
He's the switch we didn't ask for, you know?
Correct. No one asked for this.
No. But that concludes episode 207 of Warrior Nun.
Oh, you said 6 was a fair, so okay, I got you.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a 6. It's not enough stuff to put it higher, but there's enough stuff to put it past a 5, so I think 6 is a good 6 shots for that. I would like 6 shots without a demon and no lime, please.
Thank you. 6 shots with no demon lines.
No demon lines. But that concludes that episode. So when we come back, we're going to conclude the season 2 finale, which was one hell of an episode.
Absolutely. And that's going to take a hot minute.
Yeah. This episode was short because the episode was short. But the conversations that the finale will bring, because it's just so good.
So many things to discuss. So many things. So many. Oh my lord!
All right. The feels.
I'm getting the chills.
I know. Yes. So that's all we got, queers. So until next time, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye. And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. If you like this episode, check out all our other episodes on whatever you're using to listen right now. If you're listening on Apple, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review, no matter how brief. It helps us get into Apple's algorithm to reach a wider audience.
Please feel free to reach out to us. We would love to hear from you about everything and anything. You can find us on all the social medias at Big Gay Energy Pod, or email us at biggayenergypod@gmail.com. If you'd like to make friends with other queer media loving people, reach out to us to join our Discord server.
If you'd like to support us, check out our merch store or join our Patreon for early access to episodes, exclusive content, and so much more. Until next time, stay safe and hydrate for Lesbian Jesus.